Welcome to Greens vs. Blacks, a weekly House of the Dragon podcast. I'm Joseph.
And I'm Michelle.
We're two House of the Dragon fans who have decided to rewatch and recap season one whilst we wait impatiently for season two. Join us as we explore the lore and mythology of Westeros and the rise and fall of House Targaryen.
So we are rivals from ancient houses. We've got ancient...
Sorry, what?
Ancient grudges this week, like the Montagues and Capulets. You are Joseph of House Blackwood, and I'm Michelle of House Bracken.
Doesn't that mean I get to kill you at some point?
We can kill each other. I mean, who says? Who knows who's going to win?
It's like a 1,000-year-long feud.
And I think if it's like in the episode, the weaker one might win.
Yes.
So we never know. Quickly, a little bit of housekeeping. Please like, subscribe, review, tell a friend, do all those lovely things that help us to keep the podcast going. And thank you for listening.
Yes, thank you. We've had quite a few listeners, actually.
Yeah, don't sound so surprised.
No, well, it is always pleasantly surprising when you do something like this.
Yes.
We obviously very much enjoy our chats. 100%. But it's great to see that lots of other people are enjoying them and leaving lovely reviews and ratings as well.
Lovely reviews. Please leave us your reviews and let us know what you think. Any comments, questions, email us.
Absolutely. Michelle, before we get going, what have you been watching this week and what are you excited about?
Well, I know I mentioned Shogun last week.
You did.
I'm going to mention it again because this week's episode has been compared with the Red Wedding episode in Game of Thrones.
Okay, but no spoilers, please.
No spoilers.
Because I'm still on episode two.
Super, super tense episode where you just don't know. It's cross and double cross.
Oh, okay.
And it's amazing. I also went, it had a little celebration. The Matrix is one of my favourite sci-fi films of all time, probably, and marred a little bit by the many sequels. But I still look back to that experience of watching it for the first time, and it's 25 years old.
It's amazing to think that technology is 25 years old.
And it's still so influential.
It was such a game changer when it came out. And you're right, it is still incredibly influential. Yeah.
So I had a little Matrix to reap. I can't talk again. God, what happens to my mouth?
A reap watch?
Matrix rewatch this weekend. I watched The Matrix and then I watched the most recent one, Resurrections, where Keanu and
I think I gave up after
and Carrie Ann Moss are old. It's filmed in the last few years,
right?
Post COVID.
I definitely haven't seen that.
Oh, it's kind of interesting. It doesn't entirely hold together, but it's interesting to see them kind of, you know, rethinking the story after the second and third episodes. Because Tiffany, she's called in it, but she's Trinity is alive, whereas obviously she was dead. No spoilers here.
Oh, I've definitely seen the trailer for this one.
Yeah. But anyway, I then went to the other extreme but what would also have been groundbreaking technology for the time. And I took my 13-year-old to see Jason and the Argonauts, the Ray Harryhausen film, because it's the Easter holidays. And they
shaped my childhood, those films.
And I mean, when you think about it, you look at it now and you think, oh, stop motion. But actually, it's amazing. I mean, there was a lot that went into that technology as well. So it would have been equally groundbreaking and astonishing to see for the first time.
Yeah, absolutely. Is he going to watch Clash of the Titans and all of the follow-up films and series?
Well, he doesn't know about those. Oh. but he's getting interested in the idea of filmmaking and possibly in sound engineering. So we're talking about that. So that's something that might be interesting. So
fascinating.
I'd really like it if he got into filmmaking. And the thing I'm looking forward to watching super quickly is Ripley, which is the talented Mr. Ripley. But Netflix have done it with Andrew Scott, who was the hot priest in Fleabag.
Right.
Who is, I think, a superb, superb actor. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. I think he'll do that sociopathic charm really well.
He does. He does that very well. He was in an episode of Black Mirror. I thought he was very good as a taxi driver. Did you see that one?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
That kind of character.
And
quite
also
dark, but funny.
And also Moriarty, obviously, in Sherlock, where he was this sort of slightly dweeby kind of cute guy.
But full-on nemesis at the
same
time.
And then also, like... criminal mastermind. Dweeby cute guy, criminal mastermind.
I want to be friends with him. It's got a good vibe.
Yeah, definitely. What about you?
Very briefly, the show that I'm looking forward to watching is the new biopic documentary about Steve Martin, which I think is a two-parter. There's two episodes. There's a then and a now. So it charts his career from, I think he started with Saturday Night Live.
Mm.
He started with the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour.
Okay. Well, on radio or some weird American TV show sponsored by some milk company.
He started as a writer for that,
right.
Actually, a comedy writer. And then he started to appear on it. It was a TV show.
Okay.
But I think like many shows back in the day, they kind of had a bit of TV and radio output. I should say wireless. And then the follow-up is all about, well, his big film career, The Man with Two Brains, All of Me, Three Amigos. Do you remember all those films from the 80s? The Jerk. Planes, Trains and Automobiles, probably the biggest one in terms
and,
of
box
office takings.
Roxanne.
Roxanne was huge, wasn't it? Father of the Bride. Just thinking of them all now.
I never watched that. I did not feel the need.
Okay. And most recently, he's been in three seasons. Is it three or four seasons of Only Murders in the Building? Have you seen that series?
Yeah, I've never watched Only Murders in the Building. I don't really know why. It just, you know, sometimes some things pass you by.
Yeah.
And then you've missed them and you just don't go back.
I saw all the publicity, despite being a Steve Martin fan. I gave it a miss for quite a while because I thought it just looked a little bit twee. I thought it might be a little bit Richard Osman.
But then it's got like Meryl Streep and people in it now.
Meryl Streep. There's been quite a few, Cara Delevingne, Jesse Williams. There's been quite a few big people who have guest acted in it. But it's got Steve Martin, Martin Short and Selena Gomez.
Yeah.
Who is brilliant in it.
And they're just like amateur detectives.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who only investigate murders in their apartment building in Manhattan in New York.
Why are there so many murders in their apartment building? Are they doing
like,
them?
It's like, well, what the hell is going on in Morse's Oxford, you know?
Well, this has been long since been my theory about Miss Marple is that she is actually the murderer. Because wherever she goes, someone dies.
Well, it's like, Cabot's Cove woman.
Yeah.
Typewriter, murder she wrote.
Yeah, all of them.
Yeah.
It's like, you would.
It's like a Munchausen syndrome.
You would absolutely dread her coming to stay. Because you'd be like, who's going to die? Aunt Jane's coming. Someone's going to die.
Or maybe you would time those visits with people that you didn't like. Like Aunt Jane.
But yeah, so it's
hope
like.
She's doing well, by the way.
No, Aunt Jane is Miss Marple. But. but they're not real. But it is odd that, you know, that wherever they go, people end up
dead. The
body
count.
And then they solve the crime. It's like Poirot. It's like, look, I solved the crime again. Look, I'm amazing. And it's like, that's because you
did
it.
You're the murderer.
Exactly.
You piece of filth. Okay.
Moving on from Agatha Christie. Shall we hop on to the recap?
Yes.
I've written here, is this the first time we've had a pre-episode recap? I don't know what I'm talking about.
I wrote that.
Oh, what does it mean?
Listeners, we're looking at our show notes, our sparse show notes that really don't give us any guidance whatsoever. And neither of us understand. Well, I've been watching the series on Now TV in the UK.
Yeah.
And this is the first episode where there's been a kind of a built-in pre-episode recap on what's happened
previously.
And I just guessed, well, we chatted about this last week. Episode 3 tied up the crab feeder character arc and plot line, subplot line. And I feel like episode 4 is definitely moving in a different direction in terms of the internal Targaryen drama. So maybe that's the reason why we had a recap. Maybe we're just far enough in.
Yeah.
let's refresh everyone's memories.
They think that people now just can't remember anything from one week to the next.
We're all goldfish.
Too much messing around on Instagram.
Yeah, know? Absolutely.
Yeah. Our attention spans are short.
Well, I did get a dopamine fix from the pre-episode recap. So yeah.
There you go.
Worth mentioning.
So we open on a close-up of the necklace that Daemon gave to Rhaenyra, which we will remember from a previous episode. And then we see that she's in a hall. We don't know immediately where it is, but it is at Storm's End, which is the home of House Baratheon, which is a name that we should all remember from the original series, as well as the earliest episodes where we saw the Baratheons bending the knee to Rhaenyra.
It's one of the big five to seven families.
And also, I don't know if you know this, but Rhaenys is half Baratheon.
Yes, I think I did know that.
And the reason why, when Robert and Ned and Jon Arryn take down the Targaryens, the reason why Robert is the king and not Ned or anyone else is because of that Baratheon blood. They are part Targaryen.
Right.
So he has a kind of legitimate claim
more of
to
a
being
right to
in the
line.
Yeah, yeah, to being in the family, whereas obviously the Starks are a completely separate family. The Arryns are a separate family. So she is flanked by Sir Criston Cole. Finally, he's with her. And Boromund Baratheon. I love that name. That's a great name. Boromund.
It's
good, isn't it?
Very alliterative.
Powerful. Rhaenyra is shopping for her husband. As we were told in the last episode, she's going to be allowed to choose her own partner and make her match. And that's what she's doing. An elderly man.
An elderly man.
Lord Dondarrion.
Oh, bless him.
Is awkwardly trying to woo her. He keeps pausing and forgetting his words and having to check his notes. A bit like me. Stumbling over everything. And Rhaenyra is just like, oh my God. And she's, again, Rhaenyra, not good with the manners. She essentially says that he's older than her dad.
Yeah. She has that great line, did you think my great-grandmother as beautiful as they say?
Yes.
And he's like, well, that's over 5,000 years ago. And she's like, yeah, just answer the question then. Beric.
Is he Beric?
He is Beric, yes. Oh. I looked him up. He's Beric because there is another Beric, isn't there?
There is another famously. Beric. Yes, so obviously it's a family name.
Beric Lazarus, yes. and also this Beric, Beric Dondarrion, if I can say the name, his steward is the father of Sir Criston Cole.
Yes.
So if she had gone older, it would have, well, created kind of a bit of an awkward love triangle, wouldn't it?
Well, also, again, if this is about succession, which if you're a royal family, everything in the end has to be about succession and legacy.
Yeah.
We'll see that repeated again and again and again and again. Then an older man is not great for ensuring that you'll be able to have children.
No, it's just going to be changed almost within the next 10, 15 years.
And then he'll die and then she's going to have to shop around it all over again.
Absolutely.
So it makes sense for her to go age appropriate.
Built in is instability.
Built in obsolescence.
Like
these modern washing machines.
Poor old Beric. He's a mini disc. And she wants a USB-C.
So obviously Rhaenyra's like, oh, old man, okay, good, off you go. Next. And then the next is a boy of about 10.
Yeah.
And she says, oh, now a child.
He's clearly been to Toastmasters, though. He's a very confident speaker.
He's articulate. He's confident. He speaks well. He says, you know, if you come and marry me, I'll be good to you and it'll all be great. And she's just rolling her eyes. I mean, she's literally rolling her eyes so hard she's doing backflips at this point. And then we find out this is a member of House Blackwood. Lord Boroymond does tell Rhaenyra off for being rude.
But he's great in this scene.
But she's just like, whatever. And then we see that there's a member of my house, Bracken, who mocks.
Gerald Bracken.
Is that his name?
Yeah.
Gerald.
Gerald?
Gerald.
J-E-R-R-E-L.
That's not a name. That's just a collection of letters.
It's a Martin name.
Well, a member of my house mocks young...
Little Ickle Willem.
Young Willem. And calls him a craven and a cunt, which is not nice.
Well,
he's
you said
a little
worse
kid.
To me.
I know, but he's only little. And then as we see Rhaenyra leaving the hall, she's like, I've had enough of this. And she walks out. And as we see this, we see the Bracken and Blackwoods going for it. And young Lord Blackwood kills the Bracken man.
Gerald goes down.
Yeah.
With the best of them.
And killed by a 10-year-old. So who is he calling a cunt?
That's rough justice. That's going to be all over House of Dragon Instagram.
Yeah.
Point of law here. Apparently in Fire and Blood, there is no villain. The murderer in this scene, or the Avenger in this scene, but he's probably based on Samwell Blackwood, who actually loses a duel to a Bracken, to Amos Bracken, in fact, when they're bickering over who's going to take Rhaenyra's hand in marriage.
So they just raised the
stakes, flipped it,
gave them different names. But other than that, it's exactly the same.
it's an incredibly faithful adaptation.
But it's one of those, you know, this feud has gone on for 4,000 years.
Is it 4,000
years? 4,000 years.
Gosh.
You know, so this grudge, these families know how to bear a grudge.
Yeah.
They're not letting this one go. And it's like when Viserys is kind of getting a bit cross with Lord Corlys for being salty for like 2 years. It's like, these people have been at it for 4,000 years. Give him time, you know? But yes, so, I mean, this predates the Targaryens. It goes back into prehistory. It's absolutely bonkers.
And we'll probably see a lot more of it in season two.
We saw in the trailer the squaring off. So this is definitely going to come. These are chickens here that will be coming home to roost.
With knives and swords.
With swords and fire and blood. Returning home, Rhaenyra is on a ship and her ship is buzzed by Caraxes, who's doing a kind of top gun, like, you know, sonic boom
breaking
thing.
The sound barrier.
Yes.
I'm not sure dragons can do that.
Similar.
Okay.
And despite her concussion, Rhaenyra seems very pleased at the prospect of seeing her Uncle Daemon again. I wonder why.
Yes, and she's a bit nervous away from her sexy uncle for a minute. She's a bit nervous about having jacked in the marriage tour 2 months early. And she's talking to Sir Criston about, what's Dad going to think? Is Viserys going to be angry?
Well, he'd have every right to be angry, absolutely. I think, because he's actually really, really bent over backwards to meet her halfway. And she is just like, I've seen two people and I'm done. Mind you, you know, internet dating, I kind of relate. One of them asked for nudes. It was just moving too fast.
I think the other one love bombed her.
Yeah. I can see where she's coming from.
But okay, yeah.
So obviously, as we said, Rhaenyra is delighted by the prospect of seeing Daemon again. Viserys, much less so. So we see him being, I said kingified, which is not a word, but it's Martin. He's being like dressed in all his regalia to make him look as kingsly as possible. He's got his crown on. We should note that his crown is not the crown of Aegon, which is the black one with the rubies. He wears a gold crown, which is a more kind of day crown. A little bit more friendly looking.
Leisure wear crown.
Yeah, rather than the black kind of, you know, Valyrian steel crown of the conqueror.
Yeah.
This is a more soft.
The crown you wear when you want to impress people with your presence rather than terrify them.
Yeah. So he's got the whole court there. The Kingsguard are there. Everyone is there. And Rhaenyra has managed to get in there quite quickly, despite the fact that obviously Daemon would have got there first because he was on Dragonback and she was in a boat. But she's somehow already in the hall when he comes in. And she's like, not with her dad. She's blending in with the crowd so that she can check Daemon out properly. And Daemon comes in and he's wearing a funny little crown. Weird looking thing. I couldn't work out what it was made of, like bits of wood or something.
Bits of driftwood and sea glass.
Yeah. And he's also had a boy band haircut. What do you think of his haircut?
I think he's gone from looking like a Lord of the Rings elf crossed with a Finnish heavy rock drummer.
Mm.
And he now looks more like a public school boy.
Yeah, with a crown.
With a crown.
I thought he just got so much of the crab feeder's blood in his hair that they just gave up trying to wash it out and just went, let's just cut it off.
Yeah, practical. Yeah. I like that, yeah.
So Rhaenyra is gliding through the crowd. She's like keeping pace with Daemon as he walks towards the throne.
She's fixated by him.
And she is totally checking him out. And it's like she's not looking at anyone else. She's just got her eyes on him. Daemon he basically chucks this sword that he's got, which is the crab feeder's sword, at Viserys and says, add it to the chair, which is pretty disrespectful. And you can see there's a real tension in the room of what is Daemon? He's wearing this crown. What's he up to?
Yeah.
Is he coming here?
What's the next move?
Yeah, is he coming here to bring a fight? But then, despite acknowledging the fact that he's now called King of the Narrow Sea, he takes off his crown, he offers it to Viserys, and he bends the knee, acknowledging Viserys as the one true king. And then everyone goes, yay!
Peace is restored, it was that simple.
It's all good, the bros are back in town, and everyone's happy.
The bros are back in town.
Well, you can see how pleased Viserys is to see Daemon, because he loves his brother, really.
Yeah.
They have this weird like push and pull.
Well, I think practically as well for Viserys, he knows he's weak and this is strength and unity.
Plus, I think it must be very weird to be the king. You have no peers. You're alone all the time. Like we saw in the last episode when he's just sitting there on his own getting drunk. And his brother is the only person that he could really call his equal.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a prince, not a king, but they can talk to each other on a level that he can't really have with anyone else. Even the highest nobles are all his servants.
Well, and we saw that kind of bonhomie in the small council meeting in episode 1.
Yeah.
Where Daemon was transgressing, but Viserys was playing the older brother role. And I think he misses that closeness.
Yeah, definitely. And I think when they were young, they were really close. So Viserys is delighted to see Daemon, but he does ask where Corlys is, and Corlys should have come with Daemon, really, to show him the respect that Viserys deserves. And Corlys has just gone home. So this is another hint that, but still this hint that things are not well in that relationship.
Well, he's been snubbed, hasn't
he? Yeah, so. And he's holding that grudge. Otto gives Daemon a hard stare because obviously there's also this possibility that Daemon might become Viserys's hand.
Mm.
That could be something that Viserys might do if they get on really well, that Otto might be displaced as hand. So the king is happy. The court is cheering. Viserys acknowledges the realm's debt to Daemon. And then we have a party because, as we've known, Viserys does like a party.
He does.
He's always about the party.
He's in his element
when
the karaoke machine comes.
The canapes and the karaoke. So we see Alicent wearing a very ugly red and black dress.
Okay.
I just did not like this dress, and I couldn't, it didn't seem to fit with anything else that anybody else is wearing in the show at all.
I've put in my notes just to match that Rhaenyra is wearing what looks like a Laura Ashley curtain.
Yeah.
A lot of brocading.
Yeah, her dress wouldn't isn't great.
Wouldn't look out of place in a second home in Hampshire.
Her dress isn't great, but Alicent's is sort of satin as well. It's just, you know.
The sheen is just a bit of state
agent,
isn't
it? It looks sort of cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah, not nice fabric. And Alicent, again, you know, trying really hard to be the queen and do the sort of courtly thing and join in the conversation and be very polite. And Daemon and Viserys are just really rude to her, essentially. She says, we've got some new tapestries that we were given by somebody or another.
Excruciating.
I'm sure Prince Daemon would like to come and see them, and Viserys is like, no, he would not. And they're just sort of snorting with laughter and drinking their wine and being really, really just like little
wankers.
Boys. Yeah, rude little boys.
Awful prigs. And then Rhaenyra says, oh, I'll go and look at the tapestries alone.
Yeah.
And then she goes and sits down. And I'm just thinking, well, someone please go and look at these tapestries.
Well, if they were like any of the other things in Alicent's bedroom, I wouldn't want to go and look at them. Have you seen some of that stuff in her bedroom?
Is it all a bit maudlin?
No, horny.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's like maybe not right now, Alicent. You know?
We're not in the mood.
But yeah, she does go off and sit on her own and sort of sulking again. But I think she's also trying to avoid her dad a little bit. Because she's still worried that there's this conversation. It hasn't happened yet because Daemon's taken the heat for now.
Yeah.
But at some point there's going to be a reckoning, and she knows that. So Alicent goes and sits with her, and this is like the first time in ages that we've seen them connecting back in the level that they used to be on in the first couple of episodes before everything went wrong.
I'm calling them as a unit Rhaenyra Scent.
That's really awkward.
Or Alyseria. You choose.
I don't like either of them.
Team Rhaenyra Scent.
It doesn't last, so let's just
move on. It sounds like a paste someone would put on dentures to hold them in place.
This rapprochement doesn't last, so we can just move on from that name.
R.I.P. Rhaenyra Scent.
Rhaenyra is saying that because she's obviously been asked how the tour went and how the husband hunt went, and Rhaenyra still doesn't really want to be married at all. It's like she knows she has to be, but she's saying, I don't want to be stuck in some man's castle and squeezing out babies. And obviously that's quite insulting to Alicent, because that's literally what she does. She does.
And she does it very well.
Yeah. And she is lonely, and she says, you know, I'm the queen, but I don't really have any friends. I used to be Lady Alicent, and I was just another lady of the court. But now, again, like with Viserys, she's a level above and isolated, and they hold hands and they say we miss each other.
Lovely scene.
Yeah, and it's really sweet. Later on, we see Daemon and Rhaenyra meeting in the Godswood, and he notices that she's wearing the necklace he gave her.
We all do.
Yeah.
We get like a 5-second pause on it.
Just in case you hadn't noticed, she fancies you, Daemon. They talk about marriage, and he sort of gives her a different perspective on marriage, that it can just be a political arrangement. It doesn't have to be a death sentence.
Yeah, he's very philosophical about it.
But she points out that it's different for women, because obviously men are not in danger of dying in childbirth as a rule. And he has to acknowledge that. And she just wants to be alone, like Greta Garbo. I mean, I think she really does. I think she just sees this, whichever way she turns, that it's a trap for her.
Yeah, I think her opportunities are going to be limited. That's how she feels. And she just wants to saddle up her dragon for two and take Alicent for a ride into the sunset.
Or be the queen, but in her own right.
Yeah.
And not as a wife of somebody who's then going to become like a co-ruler, essentially.
And I just wanted to add, I was very happy to hear more conversational High Valyrian. I think this is the most prolonged conversation since episode one.
But yes.
I've made a note, this is obviously important, that Matt Smith can sound like someone doing a bad impression of a Greek waiter.
Posh, but fair.
Yeah, I just feel like Millie Alcock has really got Valyrian down pat, but he's still struggling with it.
But then, of course, we don't really know what Valyrian's supposed to sound like, so maybe it does sound like a Greek waiter.
Also, and this is a Crown throwback, but I can't help but feel that when Matt Smith speaks High Valyrian, he's almost channeling Prince Philip trying to speak a foreign language.
That's not going to mean very much now to I've lots said of people.
It, you won't be able to unsee it.
I'm going to not think about that at all. Luckily, he doesn't speak very much High Valyrian, I think, moving forward. Now we've established this relationship.
Yeah.
I think that's not...
It's just a sign of intimacy, yeah, isn't it?
It is. It's that. It's their...
The language of their bloodline.
Ancestral language. Yeah. Exactly. So we see the small council and Rhaenyra, she's sitting down and she has a pebble and everything. She's been promoted. She's no longer the wine girl. There's some concern that Lord Corlys now effectively controls the Stepstones and that he is planning to marry his daughter Laena to the son of the Sea Lord of Braavos, which is one of the three cities, yeah, of Essos. So we can see that Viserys' rejection of Laena is still an issue.
Yes, absolutely. And Otto then does hint that obviously if this goes ahead and there is a pact between Velaryon and the three cities, the Red Keep will have to seek out their own marriage pact.
Yeah.
Which will... And then we get a long pause on Rhaenyra's face as she again rolls her eyes so hard she almost does a backflip because she knows that means me.
Yep.
I'm going to be pimped out.
Yep. But in a weird way, it's her own fault because she's jacked in her tour. And then we see Alicent literally doing what we were talking about in the last scene. She's alone with a crying baby. Now,
I didn't get anything from this scene.
Well, it's the point is that it's like you're just trapped in a castle, like a princess in a fairy tale with a baby. And there were two things that I thought about that scene. And one is which clearly Emily Carey, great actor, does not know how to hold a baby, because if you jiggle them in that vigorous way, they are going to cry because it's not very nice.
Yeah, you're probably going to break their neck as well. Yeah.
So it's like you know, don't have to, we'll see in future episodes, but...
Rock, don't
Sir,
jiggle.
Sir Harwin understands how to hold a baby.
Oh, well, of course he does.
But she should have a nanny. Why is she holding this baby?
That's why I thought it was bizarre.
The castle's full of servants. Just get someone to take it away. Just take away this whelp.
Whelp. Why was she even getting out of bed to do it?
Now, I'm presuming that this is the baby that she was pregnant with in the last episode. So this is Helena, who is the second child of Alicent and Viserys, who will be married to baby Aegon in the future. Brother and sister. That's how...
In harmony.
That's how Targaryens do it. Rhaenyra goes to her bedroom, saying goodnight to Sir Criston, who's parked outside her door. God, what a boring job.
But at least he's finally doing it.
Yeah, that's true. And then she finds a bag of dirty clothes and a note. Now, again, I'm the princess. I walk into my room and I find a bag of dirty clothes. I'd just be going, what's this rubbish? Take, take it away.
Emptying it over Sir Criston's head.
Yeah, how did this get in here? But instead, obviously, she looks at the note, she follows the directions, and she finds the secret passages, which she clearly never realised were there. And then she finds Daemon, hooded and cloaked, and he takes her for a night out in King's Landing, which we've never really seen at night before, but it seems to turn into Burning Man at night.
Yes.
There's like streets full of jugglers, musicians, circus acts, people shagging in just like not down an alleyway, just literally on the corner of an alleyway and pretty much in full view. And yeah, there's loads going on. There's a terrible play. There's all sorts. But Rhaenyra's there like eyes on saucers. No, not on saucers. Lies like saucers. Just taking it all in.
Eyes on saucers is a delicacy, actually.
No, that would be like in Pan's Labyrinth.
Yes.
But yeah, she's taking this all in. And obviously she's never done anything like this before. She's dressed like a boy. Her hair is hidden. She can blend into the crowd.
It's nice to see that following the rampage, Daemon's rampage in episode one,
yeah,
when all the Rhaenyrists were being killed, that King's Landing still has a thriving nighttime economy.
It's
and that
certainly
I mean,
does.
The tourist board must be working overtime,
yeah,
to keep that place afloat.
But, well, I mean, you know, how much money do people spend to go to Burning Man? It's effectively the same thing. And there's a lot of talented people in this city.
Probably less patchouli oil here.
I mean, all these people up on tightropes.
Yes.
You know, are they going to tightrope school? Where were they getting these skills? There's a lot of talent.
Ye old Westerosi circus schools. Yeah.
We cut back and forth in these scenes from Rhaenyra's night out on the town to Alicent's miserable night in. So we've seen her alone with her crying baby. Then we see her helping to bathe a scabby Viserys in his bedroom.
Oh.
And... it's a weird thing because obviously there's a maid doing it and he's obviously in some discomfort and Alicent's like, give that to me, go away all of you. And he says, oh, your touch is so much more tender than the servants. And that might actually be not a good thing.
She's not doing it properly.
Yeah, because sometimes if you have to debride a wound or something, it hurts.
I've never worked on someone else's suppurative wounds, but I should imagine you have to. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a bit of excavation to be done if you're going to heal someone.
Yeah. It's like, well, you know, sometimes when you squeeze a spot, you've got to, it might hurt and bleed, but that's.
Well, she's probably knackered from shaking the baby.
she's probably got RSI
from shaking three babies in a row.
And then we see this terrible play. And again, we're seeing that the small folk, in addition to the nobility that we saw last time preferring Aegon, we now see that the small folk prefer Aegon simply on the grounds that he's a boy. And Rhaenyra boos and hisses at this, but she's the only one. Everyone else is cheering. Then she steals some food from a street vendor and, flirting 101, runs away from Daemon.
Yeah, it's all a bit cringe. But she's, hey, whatever
she's
works.
Only like 16, she's isn't 16. She? Yeah, I mean, that's what you do. Then we see Alicent in her bedroom having a glass of wine by herself.
Hang on, is this what you did at 16?
Not exactly, but I did probably flirt pathetically, like in that kind of way.
Hopefully not with your uncle, but...
Oh, definitely not with my uncle. Definitely not with my uncle.
Everyone.
No uncles, no cousins, no. Yeah, so we see Alicent in her room by herself, drinking a glass of wine. Rhaenyra, in her running away with her food, runs into Ser Harwin Strong. He is a member of the City Watch. He's a gold cloak. He recognises her, but doesn't give her away.
Oh, he is just... I mean, get to the back of the queue because I'm marrying this man.
I have written here, we stan Ser Harwin.
We do.
We do.
Yeah. Thank you for writing that.
Yeah. It's very important.
It is.
Then Alicent has dozed off with her wine sleep. An amazing.
She's a wine mom.
Oh, God. Do you blame her?
No, not at all.
And a maid wakes her up and the king's calling for her. And she says, it's really late, but obviously she knows she has to go. So she does. Rhaenyra and Daemon have gone into a brothel, and Rhaenyra, as we've seen before, the brothels, that no one has privacy rooms here. They're just like doing what they're doing in full view, and Rhaenyra is taking it all in. And again, remembering that she's 17 and she's probably never really even seen anyone kiss.
Yeah.
And now she's seeing everything that you could imagine.
She's used to just giving handkerchiefs to knights at tourneys.
Well, she's used to seeing people having their heads exploded. But she's not used to seeing people having sex.
No, that's a step too far.
Yeah, and it's interesting that, you know, violence is absolutely fine, but this is something completely new. So we see Alicent doing that classic kind of gazing up at the ceiling as Viserys moves around on top of her, and it's depressing, and obviously there's no pleasure in it for her. Daemon leads Rhaenyra further and deeper into the brothel. Oh, that was a bad pun, sorry. And there's basically an orgy going on, and they're watching as he explains to her that sex can be a pleasure for men and women, which I think is probably kind of a new idea to her, because I think up until now she's thought that the men have the pleasure and the women have the babies.
It's a very enlightened view, and I was really pleasantly surprised to hear Daemon saying this. I don't know how you felt about the kind of general ambiance in the brothel, but I have a problem with these kind of sex scenes because, not that I'm a prude, I just think they look a little bit old-fashioned and they're a little bit cliched and have a lot of platitudes, like the soft light and the moaning, and it just makes me feel, you know, the kind of porn people watched in the 70s.
Well, I think there's also this performative element to it because they're doing 100%. It in full view. And it's like, I mean, I know some people are exhibitionists and they get off on being watched.
Yeah, I'm not kink-shaming.
But I also think...
I just think it's corny.
It's, and I mean, yes, it's a brothel, but you don't have to see... people having full penetrative sex. It could just be like people flirting and kissing in a kind of ante room, and then they go away.
The vanilla room.
Well, more like the room where you just do the pre-sex negotiations and chat.
Like, hi, what's your name?
Yeah.
Do you consent?
Yes. All of that stuff.
Yes.
And then, but anyway, I mean, I don't really... The sex scenes in Game of Thrones were notoriously kind of horrendous.
They were awful. This is definitely a step up.
It is a step up, but I don't love it. And then, because Rhaenyra is obviously, she's embarrassed, but she's also horny because she's a teenager. And Daemon is winding her up. He's definitely leaning into this kind of atmosphere of sexiness and trying to rile her up. And then he kisses her. This is her uncle, who is probably 15 years older than her. We don't actually know.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of...
She's clearly caught up in the excitement of the moment.
Yeah.
She's in the right place for that kind of vibe. But it's
very problematic. Then we cut back to, because we go from like hot and horny to miserable and sad. as Alison.
And, Alison out in the suburbs.
And you see, I mean, Viserys tries. He look, you know, he speaks to her and he's like, almost like, are you okay? And she smiles politely and...
Like, touch my scabs.
And she smiles politely and she nods and he carries on and he obviously just, you know, he accepts that she... And she gets, she has, there's nothing for her here in this, in the physical sense.
Also, in the physical sense, she's given birth not that long ago. She's probably knackered and a bit.
This actually could be the night that Aemond, thinking about this, could be the night that Aemond is conceived. Yes. We don't know, because obviously she's got two. This could be Aemond's conception that we're witnessing.
I always forget that Aemond is younger than Aegon.
Ah, you said it. I got you to say Aegon. And then having...
Not the power play you think it is, but anyway.
Having got Rhaenyra properly hot and horny with a good old grope and pulling down her pants.
Can we just stop saying hot and horny, please? Because it's really...
Hot and bothered.
Even sitting here...
Is that all right?
In a brightly lit room with a cold cup of tea by my side, it's making me feel a little bit...
Okay. Damon has turned her on, and then having done that, he walks away from her, which is mean.
It is, yep.
Yeah. And also, she's 17 and he just leaves her on her own in a brothel in King's Landing, completely exposed.
No sense of duty.
Yeah. I mean, it's awful. If he changes his mind, he could change his mind. We all reserve the right to change our minds at any time, but he should have made sure she got back to the castle safely and then walked away from her. Luckily, she stomps back to the Red Keep and she's perfectly safe, but she is spotted by a small boy. Alison is lying next to Viserys and she cannot sleep. She's just staring up at the ceiling and you can see her kind of going, what have I done? Why am I here? Poor Alison. I do feel for her.
Why does no one like my tapestries?
They're not her tapestries. They were a gift.
But she owns them, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, she didn't. Known. She didn't make.
It's not like a blockbuster tapestry setup.
She didn't embroider them herself.
I see. Yes. Okay. Yeah. No, I never thought that she would actually be doing that.
So Rhaenyra stomps past Sir Criston, who's like, "What the fuck?" Because he obviously didn't see her go out. So he's like, "How are you coming back in?"
He needs to go to an optician.
He didn't see her go out because she went through the secret passages.
That's true, but. Yeah, I mean, it's his job to know about things like that, surely. I mean, he's got access to floor plans.
No. Okay, I'll tell you about this. Do you know about the secret passages? Obviously, you know there are secret passages.
I do know there are secret passages.
But the reason why nobody knows about these secret passages is that Maegor the Cruel had these secret passages built when he was building the Red Keep so that he could creep around the castle and spy on everybody. And when he, after they were all built, he had like a thanks for all your hard work dinner for the masons and the builders and the architects and everybody. And then he poisoned them all so that only he.
Guaranteeing their silence. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So this is why. And obviously Daemon, being the kind of creep he is, must have been creeping around the Red Keep, finding these secret passages, which is why he's able to kind of. Do all that sneaking around listening to the small council and stuff.
I did know that he was using the secret passes. Yeah. I did not know the history of them. That's why
no one knows they're there.
And so do you learn a lot more about them in Fire and Blood? Well, yes. You learn that bit of crucial context.
Yeah.
Mm.
So Rhaenyra is obviously, she's going to get some tonight. And she flirts with Sir Criston. I'm sorry, but I don't know how to describe these things. Rhaenyra wants to have sex.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. I feel like we've graduated to a level of maturity now that's more befitting.
Rhaenyra is desirous of intercourse.
You make it sound like a broody dog.
Well, yeah. And she flirts with Sir Criston and then she grabs his helmet. Again, flirting 101, steal your things and run away. And then she kisses him. And I felt the first time I saw this scene, I was pleased because it was the first time it really felt like we'd seen a woman choosing and wanting to have sex. Or one of the first times.
Showing agency. Yeah. 100%.
In the whole history of Westeros that we've seen. But then watching it again, I thought weirdly it's almost flipped because Sir Criston doesn't have a complete... So you don't feel that he's 100% like... You know, if the rule of consent isn't just consent, but enthusiastic consent.
Yeah.
His consent is not wholehearted, I think.
Yeah, his consent comes from the mandate that he's taken to protect Rhaenyra.
But I think he wants to have sex with her, but he also taken these vows.
He 100% does reciprocate. And there's clearly moments where he's pausing and he's weighing up his options.
Mm.
I think he's just scared as well. But he looks, repercussions of refusing her.
I think there's that, because what would happen if he just said no?
Well, exactly.
And then
off with his head.
And it takes such a long time for them to take his armor off.
There needs to be like a quick release button or something.
Well, apparently in like Georgian times, people just generally didn't bother getting undressed to have sex. They just hoik up their skirts. That's why they didn't really wear any underwear. But there's a bit where he takes off his white cloak, which is obviously to him, it's like a sacred shroud. Yeah, and it's the symbol of the vows he's taken and of this purity kind of ring that he wears, essentially. And he takes it off and he folds it very carefully and he looks at it.
Yeah.
Quite longingly and sadly. And I think he does
feel like he's
betraying his vows. And I think he feels that very deeply. And it's a little bit like, you know, we always had with Jon Snow about how he had that conflict about, I never want to father children and I take my vows seriously. And I think so Kristen does too. And I think he's really struggling with that attraction that he has to Rhaenyra.
I think this moment is like a crucial inciting incident for Sir Crispy's character arc, though, because obviously he's reneging and giving up on something that he held dear.
Yes.
His vows to protect Rhaenyra. And then when she later spurns him, drops him, he becomes, well, Sir Mansell.
Yeah, I mean,
he gets a lot of energy from that.
It's not even that she drops him. She still wants to keep him around, but obviously she doesn't. Wouldn't be an honourable relationship. And I think he wants to restore his honour.
Yeah.
And he feels like the only way he can restore his honour is by actually kind of declaring that they are in this relationship and being open about it. And when it's like, no, you just want me to sneak around and be your mistress, then that's not what he wants.
Yeah.
And he just does not see that could actually work really nicely for everyone, which,
and I kind of have to agree with him. Yeah. I don't agree with his course of action, but I agree with the motive.
Yeah, but then he goes too far.
He does.
He goes far too far. So lots of creeping around in the night. Anyway, Otto creeps out and meets someone who's been sent by the White Worm. Who at this point, we don't know who this is.
We don't.
And then we see Daemon. Now, obviously, we had mention of the White Worm.
Well, I kind of guessed who it was. Yeah. But anyway, we're not going to say that.
And then Daemon is with Lady Missaria in some cave somewhere. I wasn't really quite sure where they were. But he's obviously really hungover. So clearly, after leaving Rhaenyra, he carried on partying in some form and has ended up with her. They have a brief conversation where she says that she's no longer a sex worker. She's now doing something else.
Well, this is after he speaks to her in quite a degrading
way. Yeah,
yeah. I'm not going to listen to a common whore.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you were showing her off on a bridge.
Well, yes, she was your wife. Back.
Yeah, with child.
Good enough to marry, but not anymore. Well, she spurned him again. You see, men don't take well to this sort of thing.
Women changing their minds. Outrageous.
So she's been upgraded anyway. She's doing something better. I don't think we're really told at this point what.
She's a member of the French Resistance now.
Oh, God. Hello. So Otto goes to see Viserys and tells him that Rhaenyra and Daemon had sex in a brothel.
Can we just say in the notes, Michelle End has written boned.
Well, boned in a brothel, I think, is quite nice.
Actually, boned in a brothel, yeah.
It's alliterative again.
It sounds like a punk band name.
Yeah. And obviously, Otto is squirming because Viserys will not just let... Like, Otto's euphemizing, is that a word? All over the place. He doesn't want to say directly what happened. And Viserys is like, if you're going to make accusations, then say what you mean. Like, say it clearly and just speak the truth.
The line that made me laugh out loud again was, Rhaenyra has been engaging in behaviours unbecoming of a maiden.
Yeah, what does that mean?
It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, so...
Four steps removed from the actual fact.
And so Viserys is just like, say what you mean. And then when he does, Viserys says, that's a lie. And we see Alicent is behind a screen listening into this. We also notice that Viserys, there is a close-up on his hand. He's clutching the back of a chair and it's not just his pinky. His ring finger on his left hand is gone as well.
This must be some kind of septicemia.
Leprosy?
It must be leprosy because actually septicemia would have travelled much faster.
Because he's not dying. He's just like, he's a bit like the fly. Like bits are falling off.
It's There's been a teleportation accident in the Red Keep.
But it's just like little bits are coming off, but he's still, you know, he's still able to hold himself. You know, he's not like, oh, can't breathe. He's still functioning. His brain is functioning. He's still physically capable within limits. I mean, he's still obviously...
But there's a level of like cellular deterioration. Yeah.
But he's obviously, you know, he's still wanting to have sex. So there's still clearly...
Still got his vim.
Yeah, there's enough vim, just not much vigour.
Can maybe. I just check something with you? When Otto says she being Rhaenyra, was engaging in coupling with Daemon.
Yeah.
That's a lie, right? Because coupling is...
Coupling is having sex.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is...
And they didn't they didn't do the deed.
But this misunderstanding...
To use another horrible euphemism.
This misunderstanding is what actually kind of becomes Rhaenyra's get out of jail free card.
Yeah.
Later on. So, because obviously Alicent is listening to this. Then Viserys is absolutely livid with Otto. I mean, he clearly, every episode, I think, as we've seen, Viserys is just seeing more and more that Otto's scheming to displace Rhaenyra or to like malign Rhaenyra in ways so that he can position Aegon to be the new heir.
And he just calls it out here, doesn't he?
Yeah, again. And I think he is getting more and more tired of Otto and his stupid ways.
Yeah, and well, we see this come to a head at the end of the episode.
Yeah. And then Alicent sends for Rhaenyra, who denies this vile accusation. And Alicent's red and black again, which is, you know, obviously she's quite gussied up and queenly compared to Rhaenyra, who's in a fairly casual frock. And she's very much in her Targaryen regate. Like, I am more Targaryen than you almost in this scene, except for the queer customs.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, she's wearing the garb, but she's very ready to say to Rhaenyra, you know, I don't know what to believe because you Targaryens, you're bottom feeders. You're a bit weird.
Well, uncle. So she's not as close as brother.
Into it completely.
Uncle is not as close as brother. And last week, her dad was very ready to marry Rhaenyra off to a toddler. So she can't, you know, she didn't really have a leg to stand on. I think it's Alicent's issue in this episode is that she is jealous that Rhaenyra can be so free and careless, and Alicent is so trapped.
Yeah.
And I think that was absolutely the contrast we saw with the whole sequence.
It's been set up, hasn't it, with all of these shots of her looking miserable.
Yeah. And she just sees that. And then Rhaenyra resents the idea that this choice of a husband that Alicent throws at her is a real choice, because she doesn't see it as a genuine, she's not making a love match. She's just being given a list of people and being told to choose one.
Yeah.
With no real like feeling for any of them. Now, I wonder what you thought about Rhaenyra here, because we like Rhaenyra, but she lies to Alicent's face.
We do like Rhaenyra, but I
and
think she takes
it too far.
And she
swears on the memory of her dead mother, which we saw in the last episode, how that moved her when Viserys said it to her. And how that really cemented that he was telling her, you know, what he meant, what he said. And then she does that here.
It's so out of character, because we know that she had an incredibly close relationship with Emma. We've seen her grieve for her mother and the loss of that tight-knit family unit over the last couple of episodes. It's a weird one for her to do that. I think she's just quite strategic. She is a complete Darvo expert in this scene. She
What's
flips
Darvo?
The situation. I think it's something like, isn't it? Deflect, attack, reverse, victim order. Because by the end of this scene, we have Alicent apologising to her and trying to make it up to her.
But I think also Alicent probably doesn't want to believe that Rhaenyra did this.
I think also part of this as well, what we're seeing, this dynamic, is Alicent is trying and testing out her queenly powers.
Mm.
And sometimes I think she feels she takes things too far and she needs to then back off and de-escalate. And I think this is an example of what's happening here with Rhaenyra.
But I also think she does want to give Rhaenyra the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
I think she doesn't want to re-establish that
friendship, doesn't she?
She doesn't want to. And because they were getting on yesterday. And then here we are today.
Laughing about the tapestries.
Yeah. And then here we are today, back in this weird, like, oh, we can't be friends because there's all this other stuff and our positions just make it really difficult for us. But yeah, Rhaenyra says that Daemon took her to a show and he was a spectator and he got drunk and she was just kind of dragged along passively and helplessly and didn't really want to be there is essentially what she's saying, which we know is not the truth. But she gets away with it and Daemon is kicked by Viserys. So you see, he's still got some vim and vigour, capable of giving him a good kicking. Obviously, it helped, I think, that Daemon is still so hungover that he can hardly move. and he's thrown around by the Kingsguard first. So he's not in a good place.
They warm Daemon up for him.
Yeah.
To give him that little kitten's breath kick.
King says, "You've defiled her, and who would want her now?" And Daemon's like, "Well, I'll have her. Give her to me."
And I think he sounded quite sober in that moment.
Mm. But he already has a wife.
Does.
Who he conveniently seems to forget most of the time. And the king is just like, "You're already married and I don't want you to have Rhaenyra. I don't want you to have Rhaenyra, and I want you to get out and never come back." And that's the end of the short-lived bromance. Alicent tells Viserys that Rhaenyra denied that anything happened. And Alicent says that she knows Rhaenyra is not a liar. And we see that Viserys actually knows Rhaenyra better than Alicent does in this scene. Yeah. He knows that she has the blood of the dragon and she has the same chaotic energy as Daemon, and she's a teenager. And Daemon says, you know, he talks about, you know, when we were young, we whored up and down the streets of silk and we did what we wanted. And again, it's, but we're men. And it's as Rhaenyra says as well, I could get pregnant. It's not consequence-free.
My life is at stake.
Yeah, it's not consequence-free in the same way that it is for men. Obviously, they can get STDs, but a pregnancy would be kind of life-ending.
A bit different.
Yeah, potentially. So Viserys sends for Rhaenyra and he reminds her of the prophecy and that this responsibility outweighs everything, any sort of selfish desires or, you know, want of pleasure. She has to appear pure, and it comes back to the propaganda and that the people must believe that she's a virgin.
Yeah.
And so forget about picking your own husband. You're going to marry Laenor Velaryon.
And you'll like him.
And you will like it. And you will unite the two great Valyrian houses and the realm. So Rhaenyra, I think, kind of accepts that this is about as good as it gets. At least he's age appropriate and only a cousin. And she says, fine. But only if Viserys gets rid of Otto.
I love this little chess
the
move.
The vulture.
This is queen in waiting behavior.
And it's like, right, well, I will make this bargain with you, but yeah, it's going to cost you.
What's in it for me?
Yes. And so we say goodbye to Otto. And I can't say I was sad. I actually really enjoyed it.
Release the trapdoor.
Viserys tells him correctly that he's compromised, which he is. We've seen this.
I think Viserys deals with getting rid of Otto in a very kind way.
Well, considering how he was with Daemon in the previous scene, he didn't have Otto beaten up or thrown around. He just takes his little hand badge and explains to him. And it's interesting, he sort of does have that weird thing where he slightly implies that Otto was somehow involved with the death of his father.
That was slightly left field.
Yeah. But maybe he was just sort of saying, you know, you're one to slide in and take advantage wherever you see a vacuum. Otto is obviously not happy.
He's not. Well, he's a second son, so he has to work for a living.
And also, that you can't be anything higher than the hand of the king and the potential father or grandfather of the future king.
Yeah.
I mean, that's as good as it gets.
Any new role is going to be a step down.
Whatever job he gets after
this. What's he going to do next? Well,
just go to the country, maybe write a book, a memoir. He could write his memoirs. And then we have Rhaenyra. Rhaenyra's reading a book and the Grand Maester knocks on her door. And it's funny, that scene, because we see him walking with this tea. And if we're trying to pretend that Rhaenyra, if nothing happened and Rhaenyra's a good girl, why is he walking with the moon tea through the corridors where all these servants and people can see? We know there's this spy network. We know there's stuff going on. Would not be more sensible if you put it in some sort of flask or something. You couldn't actually see what it was.
Well, he's very clearly sending a message to anyone who's watching that if she is pregnant, she's not going to be pregnant. The problem's going to go away.
But she's not supposed to be pregnant because she's supposed to be pure.
Yeah.
And that's the lie, the big lie that they're all telling. So they need to... It's potentially a bit of a loose thread.
Yeah, her purity's at stake. But I guess another argument could be, it could be worse if it's found out that she then gets pregnant in secret and she has the baby and it's given away. Because then that's going to affect bloodlines.
I absolutely agree with her being given the tea.
Yeah.
I just don't think that people should see that she gets the tea. He could have covered it with a cloth. So this was not the Grand Maester. 1 out of 10. Not subtle there.
Bad at spilling the tea.
But also what it says is that despite everything that has been said from Alicent and Rhaenyra, Viserys is not taking any chances with this. There's not going to be any baby.
No.
He's absolutely determined.
No Daemon Rhaenyra baby.
Yeah. So that is the end of the episode.
Wow, this was quite a racy one.
It was, and racy.
Channeling that inner rubbing Jenny
your
Cooper.
Thighs.
Quite a racy episode, Michelle.
Well, it's probably the most shagging that we've seen in this series so far.
Yeah.
Good and bad, fun and miserable. And obviously, one of the things, the themes that we're talking about here, which we will keep talking about with Succession, and this week's Law Corner is about primogeniture. Do you know what this is?
Is this something to do with, like you said, Succession? And it's something to do with the male heirs going first, even if there's an older female heir?
Yeah. So primo, prime, first. Yeah. Geniture, first born. Latin.
Very Ronsil.
Yep, does what it says on the tin. So yes, yeah, so we talked a lot about succession planning and the lack thereof in Westeros, and many of the issues with that come down to this system. So the dictionary definition is the right by law or custom of the firstborn legitimate child to inherit the parent's entire or main estate in preference to shared inheritance among all or some children, any illegitimate child or any collateral relative. In most contexts, it means the inheritance of the firstborn son. And this is pretty much the norm in Western Europe. And you think about Henry VIII, two girls, but
all royal families.
Edward became the king because he was a boy.
Yeah.
Even though he was a child and he had a fully grown adult female child. No, forget them. Girls, no one cares. And it kind of makes sense in a way, because obviously if you have a big estate, you want to keep that estate as one big estate. You don't want to have to, every time you have kids, to chop it up so it gets smaller and smaller and smaller.
Well, you're going to dilute your seat, your yes. ancestral home.
And in Ireland, they have a different system. So they called them ladder farms. So the family would have had a big farm, and then every generation they'd have kind of divided it. And so these farms got kind of thinner and smaller, and each bit had a house. And so you can see why this though didn't really work. Well, especially when you have that many children. It's just, it doesn't make sense. And so you want to keep the estate intact. And then, but then that often ended up with the disgruntled second and third sons.
And where did they go?
Well, in our world, they tended to join the army or the church. Like you see in Jane Austen, it was like the younger brother's yeah. in the church, or he's been sent off to fight the wars. Or often they, later on, they were sent to the colonies. I mean, New Zealand was pretty much made up of second sons.
Nation of second sons.
But it was a good way of getting rid of them, so they weren't there kind of causing problems. But it's also, it's stupid and unfair, because you might end up with a complete loser like Joffrey being made the king just because he was the firstborn. And someone like Tommen might have actually been a better king, but it didn't matter.
It's not a meritocracy.
No. And as the crowd says in King's Landing, it's all about cocks.
Nice. Keeping it classy.
We're still in Westeros. So what we've seen at Rhaenys of this point, she seems tough and level-headed and politically savvy, and she had three children, so that succession would have been assured, but instead it went to Viserys because he was a boy or man. Now, since I wrote this next bit, I have actually discovered, I listened to an interview with George R. R. Martin, and he literally says that this is what he based this Fire and Blood on.
Oh,
the
is this
Darts the Dragons,
whole...
the anarchy.
Yeah, okay, this moment in British politics and history.
I remembered it and thought, that's interesting, it's quite similar. And then he said in this interview that that's what it was.
I think so. I've seen, I want other to pretend, people refer to it
I'm
before.
Going to pretend that this was all my
this
idea.
This is your original yeah. interpretation.
All my idea.
Move over Harold Bloom.
So there is some interesting parallels with the Dance of Dragons and a period of English history called the Anarchy. This was a kind of a fairly little known civil war in England and Normandy, because England at that point, we were still kings of bits of France randomly. And it happened between 1138 and 1153, which resulted in a widespread breakdown of law and order. So it was a war of succession precipitated by the accidental death of William Adelin, who was the only legitimate son of Henry I. And he was drowned in the White Ship disaster of 1120. Henry sought to be succeeded by his daughter, who was known as Empress Matilda. I don't really know where she was. Empress Matilda.
I learned about this in school.
Oh, did you?
Stephen and Matilda.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I didn't know it was called the Anarchy.
Yeah. So basically, Empress Matilda, and he tried to get the nobility to support her, and he partially succeeded, but not entirely. And so when he died in 1135, his nephew, Stephen of Blois, seized the throne with the help of his brother, Henry, also of Blois, who was the Bishop of Winchester. And so you can see the similarities. Obviously, That
yes.
I've only got a female successor, but she's going to be the queen. And the nobles are kind of like, oh, if you say so, Your Majesty. And he did reaffirm her again and again and again. But it's still, obviously, the minute he died, it just fell apart.
Yeah.
So Stephen's early reign saw fierce fighting with disloyal English barons, disloyal to him.
Who were supporting Matilda.
Who were supporting Matilda, rebellious Welsh leaders and Scottish invaders. And then there was a major rebellion against Stephen, and Matilda invaded in 1139 with her half-brother, Robert of Gloucester. And this probably would have gone on for quite a lot longer, because it went on for the best part of 20 years. But thankfully, Stephen died in 1154, and then Matilda's son was crowned Henry II. So it was they were able to kind of skip over it. But again...
Well, they skipped over her.
Yeah.
She exactly. went through all that.
Yeah.
She was final girl.
Yeah.
And then they crowned her son.
But luckily she had a boy, so it was all right. Luckily. We get back to normal.
Gosh.
It's the order of things, as Renice says.
Wasn't Matilda lucky?
Yes, she's lucky to live. And so I did not learn about this at school. And oddly, the way I found out about it was in what's that author called? Ken Follett, The Pillars of the Earth.
Yes, they're very, very big books.
It is a big book. And that's set during this period of medieval cathedral building and it's against this background. So yeah, primogeniture has played a huge part in a lot of the messes that we've ended up in as a country in England and the United Kingdom. Similar, as we said, with Henry VIII, you know, if he only had one boy that survived infancy but was quite sickly, whereas if we'd had Mary, she might never have been bloody, because I think she went a bit mad because of the way she was treated, like, you know, mother divorced, died, made illegitimate, then re-legitimized. And we might still even be a Catholic country, which would be in a parallel universe.
So primogeniture, is it still going?
No, but it was disestablished for...
In the 19th century
for the nobility. But for the royal family, it was only in 2013.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was lucky. I mean, obviously we had a queen, but the only reason we had a queen was because she didn't have any brothers. And so if there'd been a boy born, then she would not have been... We would not have had Queen Elizabeth. Obviously, I don't think we should have queens and kings at all. I think really it's kind of time that we moved on. But it is weird that we have this system, and it was so old-fashioned in the 21st century.
And it was only abolished in 2013.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
11 years ago. Mind-boggling.
And I think that's about it
for
this
week.
Well, thank
you very much for that whistle-stop tour of primogeniture. That's very interesting. And like you say, it's kind of... It fits into a lot of what we've learned so far about the Targaryens and their system of lineage.
Yeah, and I think this is part of the problem, is that reading back through Fire and Blood again, it's like they really did. There was a consensus that a woman would not inherit if there was a boy available. And so Viserys's insistence on keeping Rhaenyra as his heir is going against all custom.
Yes.
And that's the problem. He's not doing it very well. In many ways, it would actually make more sense for him to disinherit Rhaenyra. She wouldn't like it, but the realm would be happier.
Well, I guess we need just to tune in.
Tune in next week.
Next week for episode 5, which is We Light the Way. And this is the King and Rhaenyra going on a marital mission to Driftmark.
And do we know whose words those are?
We Light the Way? Mm. Was that Katrina and the Waves from Eurovision?
Yes, that's right. Tune in next week to hear about Eurovision.
Every week. And if you like what we're doing, please do, as Michelle said at the beginning of the episode, like and subscribe. Tell a friend. Even leave us a review if you've got a few nanoseconds to type something out.
Yes. Or tell us about your favourite episode, or what you think of the sex scenes in House of the Dragon.
Get in contact. All of our contact details are in our show notes, including our Instagram.
Yes.
So do let us know what you're thinking, and get in contact and talk to us about House of the Dragon.
Absolutely. And thank you for listening.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
See you next week. Bye.